This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL. My guest tonight is Safeta Ovcina, and she's from Bosnia. Welcome.
Thank you.
As I'm sure most of our listeners know, St. Louis is home to 80,000 Bosnians, 75,000, something like that, right?
Yep.
And I think they've really transformed the city in many ways. Safeta's story, I'm going to call you Sada. Sada is your nickname.
Right.
Her story is a little different from most of the Bosnians here because she came here before the war and was really instrumental in doing a lot of efforts to help people when they did come as refugees. So we're going to get into a lot of that stuff. And I've often said there should be a movie made about your life. And I would pick Angelina Jolie to play you for many reasons. But anyway, we're going to get into all the stuff that you did to help your community. But let's start first about your life in what was in Yugoslavia before the war. Tell us about, people might know this already, but talk about how Bosnia was a part of Yugoslavia and talk about what Yugoslavia was before it fell apart.
Okay, Amir, let me thank you first for inviting me.
Call me Amir, that's what Bosnia is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ran, thank you for inviting me. Congratulations on the show. And I'm going to definitely use this opportunity here today to thank you for everything you did for Bosnian people in the past, and you're doing probably now. I'm not very familiar with what you do now, honestly. In the past, I'm sure you helped some other refugees, and thank you so much. You are on the short list of the people who helped Bosnians when we arrived here. As far as I'm concerned, I'm from Sarajevo and Yugoslavia. It was my biggest love in my life, Sarajevo and Yugoslavia. Beautiful country, beautiful city.
And the song that we're going to play during the commercial breaks is the song called
Sarajevo, My Love. Yeah. But I want to say that I really did come here earlier. I got married here a long time ago, 70s. But I didn't come back here this time before the war. I came after the war. I was in war for 1 year. Then I came. Newsweek journalist found my daughter in Sarajevo looking for to help her get out. And that's how I got here. So really during...
But you had been here before.
I've been here before.
Let's talk first about Yugoslavia. So Bosnia is or was one, I guess, republic or part of Yugoslavia. Talk about the parts of Yugoslavia that are all independent countries now and how...
Tito, we all know he was a rare, smart, and very brave leader. And I love him so much. Probably only human being I would give up my life for.
He was
president of Yugoslavia. And Yugoslavia has been formed somewhere after the Second World War. He did play a significant role in fighting Germans and occupation, Hitler. So there was the Communist Party, but after he formed Yugoslavia, he really didn't go for communism like Russia did. So he was in between West and East, very bravely stood up for his own way to build country and help people. So, it's unique country, and if you wanted a perfect country, you would probably pick Yugoslavia, in my opinion. It wasn't like communist country like Russia. They had a tough time. That was really hard, and also NATO, he didn't like the West. So, he was be able to provide good education, free healthcare, force people to be to go to be educated, force people or to do all the right things to do. So
and Yugoslavia, what are the six republics that formed Yugoslavia?
Croatia, Slovenia, Macedonia, Serbia, Kosovo, Metohija, yep.
Montenegro. And it was such a diverse, multicultural, multi-religious country that he started the, I guess, the slogan, Brotherhood and Unity, right? Bratstvo I Jedinstvo. And he, knowing that there was a lot of ethnic diversity, even though people did live in peace for most of history, except when politicians stirred things up, he wanted to try to make everybody Yugoslavian and kind of no quote-unquote hate speech or ethnic slurs would be allowed, right?
If you think, Ran, if you think that we've been forced to be this way, it's wrong. That's the way we lived, and that's the way, for real, I believe that. I tell you how I felt. I felt I love everybody, and I never knew who is who. Actually, Bosnia and Herzegovina was in real Yugoslavia. Like Croatia, they were Croatians. Slovenia, Slovenians. Serbia, they were more Serbians. But when you go, when you come to Bosnia, mixed marriages, 37% of mixed marriages, I never knew by the name who is who. We celebrated holidays, religious holidays, any other holidays that we had by government had for us. So we like, religious leaders were paid by government to do the job. So you had mask or churches or everything. You were very welcome to go. So when you hear people say, "Oh, you know, we couldn't believe in, we didn't believe in that," no, it's not. That's the way we choose to live. So it's not. No, but we will haven't been forced. We loved it.
You had Muslims, Catholics, Orthodox Christians, Jewish. Right?
Right, right.
And Bosnia was in the middle of Yugoslavia. So as you said, it was the most, probably the most diverse other
countries. We didn't care. We were mixed. Yeah. And really, I can say that we were representing Yugoslavia more than any other republic, because Slovenia, there were Bosnians living there and Serbs and everybody, but mostly people, Slovenians, yeah. A little bit different language. Yeah. Croatia, same thing. But Bosnia, we didn't know. We were really mixed. And beautiful, beautiful.
And you grew up there. What was it like when you were a kid, a teenager? What kind of things?
Very nice. Like education was hard, and should be, because that's how I develop, you know, how you grow your brain and become smart. So that was hard, and we did it. When you finished grade school, like 8 years, you know a lot of things. You know everything. You they teach you. In, you know, as a child, you want more time to play and to have more time for yourself. But later on, you think, okay, thanks God that we had this kind of education. We were friendly. Nobody pushed anything as far as religiously. You know, we were, that's right way for that kind of country, same thing as United States, is not to care about religion and stuff, who is who. You know, that right now, I'm American, and I love America. I don't know anything else. You know, I don't see people a different way than being American. So same thing in Yugoslavia. We loved Yugoslavia. We were Yugoslavians. And we shouldn't really care who is who. If you want to believe God, believe in God. If you don't, that's your choice. So that's the way we grew up. We celebrate Tito. We celebrate his birthday. But we did from bottom of the heart. We loved him so much. And he helped people so.
And then the Summer Olympic Games were held there in 1984. Were you able to see any of the games?
Actually, I was there, and since already I lived in St. Louis in the United States, and I went back, and I had, And then the David Dorr, journalist from Post-Dispatch, came to follow Olympics in Sarajevo. And I took him to different places, the restaurants, and he's like, "Oh, you know, Sada, I'm gonna sell my car. I'm gonna live here. I'm not going back." He loved it so much.
Sarajevo so special. What really made him
people?
People
make places, actually, and I Sarajevo was unique. A lot of musicians, culturally, we were together going to, religious holidays. We were celebrating together, going into school together. All this atmosphere, friendship, that's what makes Sarajevo special.
And you said nobody paid attention to what religion people
were,
and ethnicity, where they were all just, did you call yourselves Yugoslavians or Bosnians?
Yugoslavian. But you know what? When war started, my best friend, her name was Lila. And like, we were already in the war, 92. And like, who are you? She said, you know, I didn't know my best friend. I didn't know if she Catholic, she Serb. I didn't know anything about her because I knew her as someone, anesthesiologist, good. She liked the sport. She liked very nice lady. We socialized. We didn't ask people about those things. So it didn't exist, at least not in Bosnia and Herzegovina and Sarajevo.
Yeah, and I've heard that from a lot of Bosnians here. They just they didn't think about it, but then it became an issue that they had to face. But let's not jump to the war quite yet. I'm interested when you were in high school in Sarajevo in Yugoslavia. How were you taught about the United States and the Soviet Union? I know you say Yugoslavia is kind of between East and West, neither NATO nor Warsaw Pact, but did they present these two countries in a favorable or unfavorable light?
Honestly, first of all, high school in Yugoslavia is also hard. And first 2 years, they teach you generally, they educate you about everything, including West and East and history. And third and fourth year, if you're not in gymnasia, you specialize in the, let's say I did in nursing, some other people, some technical, whatever they decide to do. And I took French. We had opportunity to have languages in the school. They had French, they had Russian, and English too. But I felt Russian was the first place. They had more classes Russian than English. English was probably the second place was French than English. But everybody liked to learn English, and we were really looking toward United States, especially not too much for other as kids and as teenagers, because of the movies and because of the after the war, there were United States helping Bosnia, throwing the packages, cheese, kind of in the back of the head.
In World War II?
After the World War II, yeah. So that we heard about it, the stories and United States, we were really impressed with United States.
But most people never thought they would be coming here to live, I guess.
No.
Yugoslavia was a nice place.
Very nice place. For me, I had opportunity to pick before the war, to pick between Yugoslavia and Bosnia, Sarajevo. I kind of destroyed my green card and everything. I picked Sarajevo and Yugoslavia. Believe me,
I believe you. That's probably a good place to take a short break here. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about how you came to the United States and like what's happened in the years since. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on Newstalk STL 101.9, 94.1.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Arnell's Hardwoods. For all of your laminate and hardwood flooring needs, call them at 314-397-3252.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by the Indoor Comfort Team. For all of your heating and cooling needs, call the Indoor Comfort Team at 314-230-9542.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
We're back with Sada Ovcina, and she was talking about growing up in Sarajevo, a wonderful city. You came to the United States the first time, sometime before the war, right? And that was through a marriage to an American?
Yeah. I didn't like it. It was living in the United States.
Was that St. Louis?
That's St. Louis. And I'm going to be honest here between when I arrived here, I really didn't come here for better life. There was personal reasons that I came here. So I was hoping we're going to go move back to Yugoslavia, to Sarajevo. That's at least what he promised me, my ex-husband. But coming here and see how people work hard and the factory and working all day from the early morning to evening and just eat a little bit, go into bed, oh, my God, and make a little money, I changed a picture of life in the United States. Everybody thought it's so easy and they just money comes from nowhere. And you know, that's serious.
Yeah.
And then, I didn't see myself in this country, honestly, and especially not having a successful marriage. So only good thing that happened to me in this couple years that I lived here was my daughter, Aida. She was born here in St. Luke's Hospital. I took her with me, and I went back in Sarajevo.
And the fact that she was born here made her an American citizen. Which will come into the story later.
Yeah.
Okay. You were surprised by how people really, a lot of Bosnians here say to me, in America, you only have your work clothes and your pajamas.
Right.
So what was the difference in Yugoslavia? How did people?
First of all, in Yugoslavia, if you get job, you couldn't lose your job. There is no way, by law, they couldn't fire you. You have long vacations. Every company, let's say my dad's company, they had own hotels in the Adriatic Sea that let people go and rest during the summer and give them long vacations. Vacations is approximately 1 month because they thought people need rest if they work hard for all year. You work 8 hours, 7 hours, you always, they're going to let you, if you have something to do, they let you get out and do the things. That's why you had Sarajevo Street is still full of the people any time of day. Because
okay, talk about what is a corso.
The kind of downtown, full of the people, and it's especially after 6-7 o'clock in the evening, everybody go to walk there, and it's beautiful people. It's crowd and all the coffee shops outside. They sit outside, they walk, they see each other, talk. It's like something that you, if you live there for 1 month during the summer and experience this, you want to stay there.
That and that not only in Sarajevo but all big and small towns.
Right? Yeah, everywhere.
People walk after work and they socialize.
Yeah, and in the evening go out and meet for dinner and walk and talk and whatever. But talking more than anything else. Yeah. And
okay, so you went with your daughter back to Bosnia.
To Bosnia. I wasn't very welcome. First of all, my family to come back with a little baby in the arm, you know that, and not looking, I wasn't really in good shape. I kind of had a hard time here. So for me, it was one thing I had to do is to get divorced. And then second thing is to find a job. So before I went, left Sarajevo, I was working in bacteriology in the hospital.
You trained as a nurse.
In bacteriology. And later on, when I came back, it took me some time to find a job. I took some additional education for anesthesia on medical school. So, but I had to come back here to divorce. Was not good experience. And I had to fight for Aida to keep her in Bosnia because she was American citizen and her father was here. Yeah, so it was tough life. But basically, before the war started, I find myself in kind of good position at work. And I had one apartment in the center of Sarajevo, very close to hospital in my dad's house. So I had my own place and very good job. I was recognized as someone who did a good job. And I felt really, really happy. And imagine then war started in Yugoslavia, 91, with Slovenia and Croatia.
I mean, people here in St. Louis might know about the war because, you know, many people have met Bosnians personally here, but, and we could talk about this for 3 hours, but can you basically break down how the war started and why and what?
After Tito died, and this was May 2nd, believe me, I think if you ever saw the people in Yugoslavia at that time, it was, everybody cried.
When Tito died?
Me too. I think I was in St. Louis. We knew it won't be good after he died, and that's how it happened, because especially probably influence of West, NATO, giving promises to Serbia or Croatia or Slovenia that they're going to have better life, that you know, they were pushing a little bit for people to divide, and this Serbians wanted greatest Serbia, Croatians wanted Croatia. Bosnians didn't want anything because what are you going to get? You have all everybody mixed there. So when they started, first of all, Slovenia left, and then Croatia, and then
I mean they ceded. They
ceded. We had the economy become really bad, and the politicians divide the people around everywhere. So nothing new. And they started talking, the people that they started hating each other, and little by little, people kind of changed toward each other, start dividing people, who is Muslim, who is, which we never wanted to know, because really Muslim as a nationality doesn't exist. Muslim is faith. And why don't you call someone in Iraq Muslim? They're not Muslims, they're Arabs. And
you say it was the politicians or the media that was dividing people?
Exactly, 100%.
We see it happening here.
I'm going to come to that point and tell you honestly what I think. So people started hating each other, talking about in my operating room, people talk politics and they start fighting about Croatia. Like some people defend Croatia, some people. I was shocked. Like, oh my God, we are brothers and sisters. How can you talk like that? And, you know, little by little, they really did divide the people by 93 when Bosnia declared independence in April. People were pretty much divided. Not in Sarajevo and Bosnia, because it was so harsh, because you have mixed marriages. How are you going to divide mom and dad and kids? I thought it never going to happen. Honestly, I never expected that it's going to happen in Yugoslavia, in Sarajevo, in the Bosnia and Herzegovina. Others are republics, yeah, because predominantly they were either Serbs or Macedonians or, you know, but not in Bosnia, believe me. They find a way, and it happened. I was in Bosnia and Sarajevo working in the surgery first year. I left. I was end of the 92 with help of Newsweek journalist Joel Brandt, who came to look for Aida, actually.
Your daughter, because she was an American.
She was American citizen. But they called me around American embassy. That probably first time in my life I thought really nicely about United States after my experience here. That doesn't, I don't want to say that they did something to me, but life was really difficult here. So they call me probably sometimes embassy in Zagreb, call sometimes in 91 to ask me to help, to tell me that we're going to have terrible war, massacre. And
told you that?
Embassy, American embassy in Zagreb. This is, you have opportunity, you have a child, American citizen, you have opportunity, we have everything ready for you to get out. And I was Bosnian, I said, you know what, if you think it's going to happen, and I didn't believe it run. And no, I didn't believe it. So I can testify this in front of anybody, right? That's true. I say, well, you know what? If you think it's going to happen, my place is here. My job is to work in the surgery. It's important. And my child stay with me. So I want to be part of it because I don't feel that as a Bosnian citizen, I should escape. That was the end of the story. War really started that next year in 1992. And I was, look at those people. They knew. They knew it's going to start. Oh, my God, Iran, they knew. They knew 100%. Probably England and France, they knew. Through the NATO, yeah.
You were working in the hospital in Sarajevo.
Right.
And you were working when Sarajevo was under attack.
Anesthesia, 24-7.
Arab extremists were...
100%, Iran.
Sarajevo was kind of in a valley, and so they were on the mountains all around the city, constantly sniping.
Yeah, and you walk, and they just shot, you know, they hit everybody, they saw every live person walk, they can kill anybody they want. But in hospital, too.
So you were...
senior anesthetist.
And you were helping people that had been shot by snipers, I guess,
but
injured by land mines.
I'm going to tell you just one thing to kind of give you a picture of how was it. Now, sometimes we had to work and help the people that we were scared to come close to the person. You had all the organs outside. It's all open. You see blood. You see organs. You never saw that in any books, anywhere. It's such a horror. It seems like a horror movie. That's how it was. There were really badly wounded people, and we didn't have even oxygen. UN didn't help us. We had little medicine. We didn't know how to... in the beginning, we used everything. And the later on, we didn't get more. And we had embargo on everything. No oxygen, no medicine, and very badly wounded people. So
Not even electricity sometimes,
not
right?
Not even electricity. They have they were burning something, it's hard to... cotton, mm-hmm, in the oil. And that's how we light. Intensive care. We had intensive care. And like... Radovan Karadzic, he worked in the same hospital, and I saw him on a regular basis almost every day. And he would come to, when we have like wounded people in car accident, he come later on to, we call psychological, someone, he was a psychiatrist, right? And we call them to come to kind of evaluate patients. And he come and he's friendly and sit with our nurses in intensive care and eat together from same plate. He was a little bit crazy.
Before the war.
Almost till the war started, like.
And but
then he suddenly started telling that he's going to kill all the Muslims, that he's going to... I didn't even believe it. I thought it's a joke, you know?
He said that to you all? Like,
he was talking on the radio.
Now this was Radovan Karadzic was... he's now, I'm thinking... prison. He was tried and convicted in The Hague, right?
Yeah.
And he was one of the orchestrators of the genocide.
I think he was used. Believe me, he's a stupid... like I say, I was be able to kill him. When war started, we would see each other in the morning. Like, you know, like I said to my brother, maybe I can kill him. He's like, oh no, because it's going to be worse. Because you don't want people who threaten other people. We were under shelling in operating room. You operate on someone who is wounded, and they shelling the hospital and kill doctor and nurses and patients and everybody.
Let's make it clear that in Sarajevo, as you say, it was a very mixed community. And so it wasn't, I think some people think it was like a, you know, Muslim against Christian war or whatever, genocide. It was. Quote, as Bosnian would say, normal people against extremists, right? Plenty of good Serbians living in Sarajevo, probably working with you in the hospital.
100%.
But it was some misguided Serbian people were trying to destroy that multicultural community in other parts of the country, too.
Just when war started, a lot of Serbs left the hospital, very good doctors. The best doctor in neurology, best doctor in thorax. It's very important. part of the surgery. So a lot of people left. Some people didn't leave. They stayed in the hospital with everybody else to work together.
Yeah.
So, but I think, Ron, it's politic. The guy who was a thoracic surgeon, Dragan Kalnić, he was president later on. We spoke all the time. And believe me, before the war started, I didn't really care about politicians because I always think those people are liars and nothing good about, no matter where they're located. And we were discussing what's going to happen. He became from a socialist party. He became And he became president. And I said, you are a doctor. How can you be part of it? And he says, you know what, Saada? You have opportunity to go to United States. You better go.
He knew so.
Everybody knew except us.
Except, okay, we need to take another short break. And then I want to talk about all the things you did in St. Louis to help refugees as they were coming in the 90s. Okay, we'll be right back. This is Stories of New Americans at News Talk STL.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Samim Afghan Restaurant, featuring traditional Afghan cuisine and conveniently located on Manchester Road in the Grove.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you by Hacking Law, for individuals who want to come and stay in the U.S. Hacking Law fights for immigrants every day. Visit them at hackingimmigrationlaw.com.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans. I'm talking with Saada Ovchina. And I want to jump a little bit ahead to, obviously you were able to get out of Bosnia with your daughter. And you relocated to St. Louis at that time. Is that right?
Yes. I want to go back to that moving out of Sarajevo. It was kind of maybe interesting to... it's important for me to mention to you. So when journalists came in 1993 in my apartment in Sarajevo, I didn't have heat. I was heating under a stove. And he just talked to Aida. He was maybe 22 years old from California. And he's like, I'm here to talk to your daughter. She's an American citizen, and I want to help her get out. All the paperwork already in Zagreb. And then he spoke with Aida. She spoke a little bit English because she took English in the school. She said, well, do you want to get out? She said, yeah. And then my family push and hospital, everybody says, maybe if you get out, maybe you can help more. We better go because we couldn't even help patients anymore. Like you do the neurosurgeon work on the person, the surgery on the spine and local anesthesia. So it was really bad. And then I've been kind of pushed by everybody to get out. I didn't want to get out, Ron, because I felt really bad and I felt kind of low. It's to live in that situation, to leave your family, to leave hospital and people and everybody.
Guilty.
That's how I felt all the time. And you know that. And the guilt was something that was following me all this time, probably. I didn't want to get out when this journalist left. Like I say, I'm going to think about it. He came to my hospital to talk to me again. And then a couple of months later, we were almost on the end of the year. We were really in bad shape in every way. And Aida was begging me to get out. And I was, okay, if I don't, she had the opportunity to get out. If I don't take her out, something happened to her, because very early in the morning, kids will go to find the water before shelling during the dark to get some water. And the water she brings in, I use because we didn't have water in hospital. So to clean myself and the blood and all this, I come with bloody uniform home. I live very close to hospital. So I decided to leave. I was in December, it was the Eve holiday before the Christmas in the evening, Christmas Eve. And we went with my brother and someone else helped me. We went in UN for paperwork and all this. We were going with a transporter to airport. And then with humanitarian aid aeroplane, we were sitting on the floor. We came to Zagreb. It was
dangerous, too.
A couple more people was with us. And Ran, we came, was in Zagreb. I had Yugoslavian passport. I had U.S. passport. And they say, well, you know what? We won't be able to let you go in. We were sitting on the something like hallway, and through the glass door, you can see everything inside, like a small trafica. You know what trafica is? It's a small place they sell cigarettes and stuff.
Like a kiosk.
A kiosk, candy. And then it says, you guys have to sit here and wait. You're going to call embassy to help, to come to pick. We waited for 8 hours just because my passport was Yugoslavian passport. And then consul inside came to pick us up. It was 11 o'clock in the evening. She was very happy, crying. I said, well, I do apologize. I know it's holiday. She said, no. I'm very happy to do this. It's my honor. And nothing better could happen to me than to help American citizens to get out. And they took us to a hotel, and she was so nice. And I like, oh, my God. Now I know it's so important to be American. And I wanted, first time in my life, I really wanted to be part of this country and to become citizen. Honestly. And then I came here, nobody really knew anything about it. They knew a little bit, but they didn't know. CNN wanted to interview me in Zagreb. Like, what are you going to talk about it? You know, you sit there and you know what's going on. It's massacre. It's civilian massacre. Run, regardless if you serve, I had people I treated in hospital, we don't have time to talk about it, there were Serbs. Whoever you are, if you're inside the town, you're dead. They don't know you. They don't know who you are. So they've been killing everybody, whoever moves, kids, adults, old, regardless. Hospital.
Thousands of people were killed in Sarajevo alone during that siege. Okay, you came to St. Louis.
And then
I know you were very active, and even though you were kind of suffering probably from PTSD yourself, you did a lot to help the newcomers.
You know what, Ron? I help by involving people like you. First of all, Christine Bolesanko was a beautiful, but wonderful lady. Of course, speech. She wrote the story, and this story moved everybody, and I got in touch with you and Rich One and Elsie Roth, Hadassah, all the good people. Wasn't really good, big group of the people, but was really wonderful people, and small group of people always can make change. Like Elsie says, small group of people change the world, and I really think so. So to make story short, I got involved. These people did more than I did, but I was part of it. Maybe I was inspiration for these people to help. Like we have Rockview School District. They collected money except a school in Sarajevo on the border. Sister school sending the money and equipment, and I found Hadassah. I became a member of Hadassah, life member. I'm still a member of Hadassah, probably one Muslim and millions of people, members of, I don't know, probably they're all Jewish. Wonderful people, they, Elsie, and they all under the shelling went in Sarajevo to see what people need.
Yeah, and you went with her, didn't you?
One time I went, but before I went with them, Elsie and Kathy Bashar, some other nurses, they went directly in hospital when I worked to see what they need.
They went to Sarajevo during the siege.
Yeah, they went to Sarajevo. So they were under shelling. They sacrificed their life to go in to see what people need. So it's not a joke. It's a big thing. I want to see people who would do that. There are still people that sacrifice their life to help someone else in some other country or somewhere. But I know for sure these people did this. And then Marlene Miller and you, I remember a lot of times the people don't have to pay rent. They come here under the stress. First refugees here, and they didn't look good.
Well, the first refugees I met from Bosnia were literally just out of the concentration camps. The United Nations was able to get some out, and they looked like toothpicks. And they were traumatized, and we didn't have anything in St. Louis. We weren't prepared for that.
No.
We are now, I think, I hope, but in those days.
Thank you for saying that, because International Institute was bringing these people, but, you know, they find them apartment. It's hot, it's summer, and all the, I'm not prejudiced in any way, the black people around, they never saw black people, especially people that come from villages. They were in concentration camps, mostly people from villages. And then they scared, they came from the camp, they don't know if someone going to kill them here too. They didn't know where to go to be treated in the hospital, so I had to deal with Barbara Bogomolov from Jewish Hospital, so they kind of start to go to Jewish to be their primary hospital to be treated. But they had insurance for 6 months, and until they come to see the doctor, it's already 6 months. Well, oh my God. So it wasn't really easy. It was really hard. But in that time, Ron, people, they were sticking together. They love each other. They like each other. They just work, and they wanted to help people in Bosnia. So mostly American people were really friendly, offered the jobs, offered the help privately. The government, they didn't do.
Yeah, I think...
they had to pay back for the tickets and everything.
Yeah. When they come as refugees, they... Of course, they have to fly here, and so they have to pay back
right.
the cost of the airplane ticket like a student loan. But I think a lot of, I think you agree with this. So, you know, we weren't Americans, most Americans never even heard of Bosnia before.
Right.
And we got these Bosnians here in St. Louis, and you know, we didn't know, when we'd see things about the war, we thought, oh my gosh, they're primitive people coming from the jungle. They don't know how to live in a modern society, which is obviously wrong. And there were a few, you know, a lot of companies didn't want to take a chance on hiring them because they didn't know if they'd be good workers, but a couple of companies did. I can't think of that. There were a couple of companies that hired some Bosnians, and they proved to be such good workers that everybody, when I was working at a church agency, we'd get calls all the time from employers wanting Bosnians.
I remember ACMA something on there was a company for small batteries for and people, you know what they did when they got job? I was voluntarily helping them to get a job translating.
Yeah.
They worked two shifts.
Yeah. They
worked two shifts, full two shifts. And they were so impressed. So after, you know, and then I know on the radio they were asking all the time for advertising that they need workers and stuff.
Yeah, now you had a radio show here for a while. For many years you did a radio show, and I think the main purpose of that was to help share information with people about life here.
Exactly.
But also you did a lot of, you know, you played music to kind of bring people back to a, like Yugoslavian music to bring people back to a
Exactly. Help and also they got news from Bosnia on all language, and they didn't speak any English, and they were scared and stressed and they didn't understand anything here. So they were every Sunday they were sit together like 100 people, 40 people here and there, and were listening radio and listening music. And yeah, it was really important. But later on, really became they started having programs directly from Bosnia and Yugoslavia, and so it wasn't that important. But we got the job to go to Fort Polk. They were making good money there. Yeah, and they didn't want to go around. They needed 350 people to go to work there to kind of improvise the Bosnia, and they were scared to go. They said, well, we don't want to go. If you're going to go, we're going to go, because they thought they're going to kill them, put them in the buses, and probably kill them. You know, it's just human, you know, people. They feel probably under the stress.
And, you know, we got thousands of Bosnians coming to St. Louis. Not all of them were resettled here directly. I think the internet took some. But, I mean, a lot of Bosnians were resettled in other American cities, and then they moved here. You know, some of them moved here, relocated, because maybe they lower cost of living here.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And a lot of, there was a pretty big community, and maybe they found out they had a relative here.
Right.
What were some of the biggest needs that you saw that these newcomers had in those early days?
Oh, they needed everything. The first thing they needed, jobs.
Yeah.
They needed apartments. They needed money. Everybody smoked. They didn't have money to buy cigarettes. So jobs was number one. But sometimes people were mentally ill. Like I remember one time I called you to ask you to help someone to pay apartment through the church because he couldn't pay. He got mentally, he was from Srebrenica, get up in the evening and pack and says they're shelling us and stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, these people, I think a lot of our listeners know the story, but, you know, the things, like the guys that I met, the first people I met who gave me my nickname, Amir, they were the ones that I think they came in 93 and they were right out of the concentration camp. And, I mean, the things that they witnessed and the things that they experienced themselves, people could look online and see some of the things that happened in those concentration camps, but it's worse than what happened in the Nazi
camps. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
And to think that one human being can do this to another human being, so it's no wonder that they were traumatized when they came here. And as I said, we didn't really have anything in place yet to help them.
Well, it's a small group of people that help find that furniture rich and you. And
talk about like psychological.
Oh, psychological help. Of course.
Yeah.
You know, these people, believe me, they didn't, mostly successful people, Bosnians today are people who came from Germany. They already had money. They didn't experience the war. They were different. But these people, concentration camp people, you know, they probably retired by now. And, you know, they're okay. But sometimes most of them are mentally ill.
I don't know if they're mentally ill, but they, you know, I think a lot of them, one of the reasons they worked two jobs is they needed the money, but I think that also kind of took their minds off of the bad memories. And I know a lot of, when the economy went down, this was, I don't know, 2007 or 8 or something, a lot of them got laid off. And then when they were out of that routine of working 16 hours a day, then the memories came back.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's how, well, anyway. Go ahead.
Yeah. So right now, people in beginning they were settled in the city, St. Louis, and they cleaned up the houses and repaired the houses. Was really very positive impact on the St. Louis city, St. Louis, because that's where they locate them in the beginning. And then later on, when these people from Germany came, they started buying houses in south, further south, and especially when the little girl was killed, Selma. They all kind of got a little bit scared and they were moving out. So most of the people move southwest. They have nice houses, they have a nice life. I think they, right now, like every other community, they're okay. Yeah, they're fine.
Most of Bosnians, I think they're doing well. You know, they're because they work really hard and they've been able to make a good life for themselves.
As far as I'm concerned, I do real estate. I did start real estate. And I was thinking about going back to hospital between finding good school and helping Aida to educate herself and myself. I decided for her and my family, but I wasn't sure I'm ready to go back to face the blood and all this again. So that's where I still do a little bit real estate. And I thank you for.
Well, do you have any final thought, any message to America?
I think one of your questions was, do I have any similarity, do I see any similarity between Russia and Ukraine and Bosnia? In the way, yes, just only different, similarity. I see that being sacrificed like we were sacrificed. But I see similarity between United States and Bosnia because we love United States. We feel proud to be Americans. And that's how we felt about Yugoslavia. Politicians divided people. And I'm just saying this. Please don't let politicians divide us here. Because if they do, they already started. Won't be good. Because it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And you see Yugoslavia here. That's my opinion. And that's all I have to say. Take care of what you have. That's important.
Appreciate it. All right.
No, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for the invitation. Thank you for everything you did for us. So Good luck on your show. And
okay. Well, I wish we had more time to talk, but then all your hard work. All right. You've been listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1. Thank you for listening.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.